Success Leaves Clues podcast with Robin Bailey and Al McDonald. Have you ever wondered what makes someone successful? What are they doing that's different? How do they achieve greatness? We believe that success leaves clues. In this series, we are interviewing very successful people from different walks of life to hear their stories. We'd like to remind our listeners that the views expressed in this podcast are those of our guests and not necessarily those shared by our hosts. Today's episode is sponsored by Life and Legacy Advisory Group. Discover our commitment to our clients. At Life and Legacy, building wealth, securing your family's future, giving back, and creating a lasting legacy are not just values, but a way of life. Let us guide you toward a future aligned with what matters most to you. We're also brought to you by Aria Benefits. If you're a business leader challenged with talent attraction, employee engagement, or supporting mental health, we can help. Use your benefits package as the key to unlock your workforce. Now here's your hosts, Robin Bailey and Al McDonald.
Welcome back to the Success Leaves Clues podcast. I'm your host, Robin Bailey, back at it again with my amazing business partner and co-host, Al McDonald. Al, how are you doing these days?
Amazing is a great word, Robin. Amazing podcast Fridays and amazing guests. And today will be no exception. Really looking forward to today's conversation and learning all about our guests and hearing a story.
You know, the only challenge with this podcast is I've met so many amazing people that I want to hang around with all the time. And I try to coordinate the schedule and it just doesn't work. So maybe it's just a huge event in our future where we can all hang out. But with that said, we are absolutely thrilled to welcome Clive Kinross, CEO and co-founder of Propel Holdings, a seasoned entrepreneur with a history of building successful and innovative technology businesses. Clive co-founded Propel in 2011 with a mission to provide access to credit for underserved consumers overlooked by the traditional banks. An accountant by trade, but an entrepreneur at heart, Clive uses his bold and visionary leadership style to build Propel into one of North America's fastest growing and profitable financial technology companies. Over the last decade, Propel has helped over a million customers access credit, and in doing so, has achieved profitable, sustainable growth. Clive, welcome to the show. I've been looking forward to this.
Yeah, wow. That sounded so good. You know, while you were reading that out, that was fun to imagine if that was me or not. In any event, really delighted to be here and looking forward to the conversation as well.
It feels good to know that you're so accomplished.
Well, I didn't know until you were reading all of that out. You know, I still live with the same insecurities that I had when I was 14 and 15 years old. So it was interesting hearing all of that.
Well, imposter syndrome is something that we could dive into, but I thought where we'd start, we had such a good conversation. And again, I've been looking forward to this because it's always such a thrill for me to hang around and chat with other entrepreneurs. And on the surface, when you're looking on social media, being an entrepreneur, wow, what a fantastic thing. This is easy. You get the riches, you get the travel, you get the cars, the whole bit. But let's face it, every entrepreneur has those tough days. And I'd love to start, it's a bit deep, Clive, but I'd love to start. What stood out as one of the hardest days for you in your journey? And maybe expand on that. What did you learn from it going forward?
Yeah, it's been a lot of challenging days, you know, and as the playing field continues to change and evolve, the nature of the challenges is different as well. This is the second business I founded. I've had lots of challenges in both, frankly, but your question I'm going to assume is more focused on Propel. And I remember in our early days, one of the ways we transact with our customers was through the ACH rails. And we worked with a processor in our early days, one processor in our early days, who in essence did our ACHing. And by ACH, that's automated clearinghouse. Just for those listeners who don't know what that means, when we credit, when we send funds to a consumer, we do it for the most part through the ACH rails. And similarly, when a consumer pays us back, they also do it through the ACH rails. The processor that we were working with was working with other industries as well as other fintechs who weren't necessarily abiding by the regulations. And as a consequence of that, the regulators went to shut them down. And if our processor got shut down, it meant that we couldn't send our credits and we also couldn't debit our consumers for their payments. Suffice to say, that happens invariably in business without a whole bunch of warning. When the shit hits the fan, it hits the fan and you're left to pick up the pieces, so to speak. We were very fortunate that we had other really good relationships and were able to mobilize additional payment processors and at the end of the day, not skip a beat. But, you know, what we had to thank for that was a tremendous work ethic, excellent relationships that we had fostered, folks who were prepared to jump over fences and climb walls for our benefits. And again, we didn't skip a beat. What I learned from that in the business is not to have any single points of failure, have redundancy across the board. Obviously, over time, it's easier to build up that redundancy with partners and processes and so on. In the early days, oftentimes you are just dependent on one partner for critical processes or critical steps. And again, if there is anything that you could identify as being absolutely critical and a point of failure for the business, even in the early days, I would encourage anybody to look for redundancy early on.
Clive, I think anyone listening to this within 30 seconds of listening to you speak is going to realize, well, that's not the Canadian accent that I'm used to hearing. They hear this beautiful accent coming through, you know, either through their video while watching this or listening to this. And it makes me think about my own journey coming up. And I was born in Canada. My parents immigrated to Canada. I was the only one of my siblings born here. And I just think that gave me such an advantage in terms of growing up and becoming an entrepreneur and making all those failures like we all do and like you're talking about. But I have to imagine that is exponentially more challenging when you're coming from a different country. Can you maybe talk about just your journey, about your background and where you came from, and if that presented any new challenges or maybe even opportunities that weren't available with where you were before?
Yeah, that's a great question. And immigration is not for the faint of heart, I could tell you that much. And I'll start at the end quickly, and just your comments about my accent. I do think over the course of my career, having an accent has actually been probably on balance a positive. Amongst other things, people could remember me just because I got an accent. And being memorable, particularly if you combine it with positive memories, ultimately is a good thing. And you come across a lot of people in the business world, and having one or two that stand out or are more relatable is a good thing. And again, I think the accent helped me with that. But by way of background, as you say, South African, born and raised, immigrated to Toronto with my wife when I was 27 years old, literally with the bags on our backs and lots of hunger and ambition, and with a good education, being a qualified chartered accountant, where I just recently completed my articles of traineeship at Arthur Andersen. Took up a job in South Africa in private equity prior to my papers coming through. In those days in Canada, just like today, they obviously encouraged immigration, but they were perhaps a little bit more focused on looking for people with very particular skill sets. And at the time, they were looking for accountants, so I qualified, put in my papers. And as soon as they came through, I was, you know, literally on the next flight out to Canada, where I had a job in merchant banking, real estate merchant banking. Despite the fact that I was a CA and well-versed in finances and so on, probably after 5 or 6 months, my confidence was at an all-time low for a few reasons, one of which a lot of the terminology in Canada was different to how we used to speak in South Africa. And oftentimes I would be in a meeting and not fully understanding what folks were speaking about, even though obviously over time, you replace one terminology for another terminology, and these things make sense. But at the time, went through a lack of confidence that didn't necessarily have a support system around me, really, other than my wife, to help me navigate that and to help me with the social and confidence part of continuing to push through that. In my heart and in my head, you know, obviously, I was going through some confidence challenges, and again, didn't have the infrastructure in place and all the friendships and relationships to help navigate or share through that. I still took the bold step of resigning from that job. While I was in that period of thinking about what was next, in my head, I was looking for an opportunity as distinct from a job, which, you know, was quite a bit of chutzpah, given that I was new to the country and coming off of an experience that wasn't, from my perspective, the best experience in the world. I met a gentleman by the name of Michael Stein, and Michael had recently, at the time, just taking Cap REIT, the first apartment REIT in Canada, public on the Toronto Stock Exchange. He was the founding chairman and CEO of Cap REIT. The internet was growing, and Mike saw something in me. And, you know, I obviously was only too eager to align myself with such a smart, good person as he was. And he brought me into his holding company, gave me a small little office, gave me a computer, paid me a nominal salary at the time, but a salary nonetheless. And we forged a loose relationship, which ultimately led to the formation of a company called OpenLane. OpenLane was the first business that I started. We facilitated the sale and distribution of used cars over the internet, business to business, a transformational business model that we grew to industry leaders in both Canada and the US, and ultimately sold that business to Car Holdings for just under $300 million post the global financial crisis. And one stage of the business was valued at a multiple of that. I founded and built that business, obviously, with an exceptional team. And again, you know, didn't have any networks, couldn't pick up the phone and call anybody that I went to school with. To the extent that we did business with Ford Motor Credit, with GMAC or US Bank, Chase Bank, Enterprise, Budget, GE, it was all through contacts that I met the whole way, going to conferences, going up, introducing myself to people, hopefully being personable and respectful and breaking down doors in the hopes that they would meet with me and understand what the business was. And as I got more traction and developed more customers in that business, obviously the word gets around, being a transformational business model, and we were really moving the needle. And it became a really interesting topic at conferences. I was often invited to speak about the model at conferences, and gradually started developing confidence and a network, which at the time was more business focused than it was, call it socially focused. And being in at that stage, late 20s, early 30s, the only thing that seemed to matter to me was building a business, not necessarily building a social network. So I would say I was in that mindset probably for the best part of 10 or 12 years. And at some point in the middle of that, I joined the YPO, the Young President's Organization, which when I first heard about it was something aspirational to me. So I was delighted to join that network and obviously developed excellent relationships, particularly with my YPO forum buddies. And as the years went on and as I went from moving from, call it, frantic and desperate and paranoid about the business to recognizing some of the successes and the confidence and some of the good things that come from that, I was able to kind of take a breath and put more of my efforts into expanding my network and my social circle and things like that. But it was certainly a good 10 to 14 years just with my head down, working without exaggerating, 12 hours a day, sometimes more, for that entire period.
Clive, you've already mentioned it a couple of times. You've made reference to the people that you network with and the community and the team around you. I'd really love to hear how you approach team building, and maybe most importantly, what are the qualities you look for in the people that are around you?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think in my early days, Al, I looked for people who reminded me of myself. Not that I'm so great, you know, not that I'm so great. And it took me a while to realize that I have some unique skills. I'm highly skilled in certain areas and I'm highly flawed in other areas. So from a pure skill set standpoint, I've learned over time to look for people not necessarily with the same skills as me, but with complementary skills and folks that could do things way better than I can do them. And rest assured, there's a wide range of different skills that I'm just not good at. So from a pure skill set standpoint, that's what I look for. But that's secondary to what I call values. You know, I'm looking for like-minded people. I'm working still today, 8 to 10 hours a day, 5 days a week, sometimes more than that, with people that I want to relate to, I want to have fun with. I want the relationship to be not only a business relationship, but a personal relationship as well. And frankly, it is always a personal relationship. Whether we use the expression, it's only business, it's not personal. We're dealing with human beings, and dealing with human beings, it's always personal. So, you know, like people with like-minded values, see the world the same way, people that are highly competent in their respective area, team players as distinct from people who put themselves first, and care. There's a lot of people who are highly competent but don't really care that much. There's a lot of people that care a great deal but aren't that competent, frankly. And finally, the ones that are both highly competent and care a great deal, in my experience, has not been an easy thing to do. when you find them, hold on to them, treat them like you'd like to be treated, whether it's financially making sure that they're well looked after, invariably pay them more than what the market would pay them more than they could get anywhere, because if they really are that good, that's still a fraction of what they're really worth to the business. And be a friend, be a sounding board, support them not only in the business, but support them personally. Business is an incredible area to make great friends and lifelong friendships. And if you look at it through that lens, I believe you could foster a culture and loyalty and longevity with the team. It's different to just relating to them like people that we do business with.
There were a lot of nuggets of gold in there. And I could probably, as you were going through everything, I probably came up with three or four different questions I wanted to ask, but I'll focus on one. And it was around some of the first things you said, that at the beginning, you know, you look for people who were like you. But then at some point you said, you know what? We're not talking about values. We're talking about skill sets. It's better that I surround myself with complementary people. I think for a lot of, especially new business owners, there is the thought that, you know, I kind of know the answers. I want to do it my way. But then you realize, like you said, I need some other skills here. I'm not good at everything. Where do you think that happened for you? And what would be your advice to people to recognize that and get people around them that are complementary and might challenge them a little bit?
Yeah, it's a great question. There's a lot of psychology involved in that too. And let me try and unpack it a bit. But before I do, if I may, I want to just establish a little bit of credibility around this. Propel is a business that I started with three co-founders in 2011. Propel, for those that don't know, went public on the TSX in 2021. We're the best performing IPO of any company that went public post-2020, notwithstanding a pullback in our share price over the last month or two. Looking at purely at our performance, our LTM, last 12 months of revenue in 2021 before we went public, was about $95 million. This year or last year, we did about $450 million organic growth. Profits grew from about $9 million to $62 million. And we put out guidance that contemplates roughly 50% bottom line growth on top of that. What really fuels that is our outstanding team. Again, three co-founders that are with me 14 years later. I think that's kind of unusual. We had an excellent relationship then, and if anything, I think we have an even better relationship today. It's more like a brotherhood or a friendship than it is business partners, if you will. And the same goes to the rest of our 20-person plus executive team. Over the years, we literally have never lost an executive. And of the executives that we do have, the average 10 years, 8 or 9 years, which I think speaks to doing something right from a cultural perspective. And it's those people, as well as the rest of the company, that fuels the growth. So just want to establish that credibility, because, you know, we could all have our own philosophies at the end of the day, but if you've got the track record to back up the philosophy, in my mind, that's an important data point. And I think early on in my career, I thought to myself that I needed to be the smartest guy in the room on everything. That was the mindset that I went into it at, and invariably felt uncomfortable in a meeting if I wasn't the smartest guy. That's maybe ego-driven, that's maybe insecurity-driven, maybe there's an element of immaturity that's associated with that. And more, you know, the other thing I was incredibly focused on in my earlier days in particular was reading biographies and autobiographies. Everybody used to speak about surrounding yourself with people that are smarter than you. And frankly, I used to think that that was BS. You know, I'd be completely insecure if I surrounded myself with people that were smarter than me. And over the years, as I got more successful and more confident, I realized and got to know myself better and where my skill sets lay and where they didn't lie, and got more and more comfortable with constantly surrounding myself with people that were smarter than me, knowing full well where my core competencies lie and where my skills lay, which amongst other things was identifying people who are smarter than me and better than me in their respective areas, and also focusing my efforts in areas where I could add the most value. And every CEO has a different skill set. You know, mine happens to be more on the sales business development side as well as the finance side. You'll have other CEOs who have more of a legal orientation, others who have more of a tech orientation. And depending on who the CEO is and what he does, it's been my experience that it's good to fill out the rest of your team with like-minded people, but complementary skill sets based on what the business needs.
I love that. And I'm reminded, and again, someone much smarter than me said something to the effect of, if you're the smartest person in the room, you're in the wrong room. I always remember that.
Yeah. By the same token, there are topics that I'm the smartest person in the room. Or probably my experience and my wisdom is probably towards the upper end of the scale over there, and where those meetings, internal or external, are happening, it's important for me to be participating over there because I could add value that ultimately can move the business forward.
Well, Clive, why do you think we're sitting here with you today?
That's right.
Obviously, right? This is why I love hanging out with people like you. And we are going to bug you for a lunch after this, because I think we do have to hang out in person, because that has been one thing that was a bit surprising with the podcast, the people that we've got to meet and actually become friends with and hang around. And again, it's been incredibly beneficial to Al and I to hang around with people who are at our level.
Smarter than us.
More smarter than us, because we've learned a ton. I mean, almost 250 episodes in, that's starting to trickle down. And obviously, conversations like this are going to trickle down to our listeners as well. So on that point, for those listeners, especially now that, you know, you've got some wisdom, you got a few gray hairs on the side, just like I do. And because we're at the, not the end of our career, obviously, but we're on the other side of being youthful in our career. There are a lot of people, I think, and I was talking about this earlier in the podcast, I think there's a lot of misconceptions about being an entrepreneur and starting a business. Looking back now, if there are young entrepreneurs coming up, what do you wish more of them understood right from the start of that journey that could maybe shorten that time a little bit for them?
A couple of things. First of all, your comment about spending time with kind of entrepreneurs and like-minded people. You know, years ago, I read a study, I think it was a Harvard study. At the time, I think it was the 100 wealthiest people in America, and the study was all about, what is it about them that's made them so successful and so wealthy? Was it the school that they went to? Was it their upbringing? Was it their culture? Was it male versus female? What was it? What was the distinguishing variable? And believe it or not, the distinguishing variable that the 100 wealthiest people in the world, certainly the 100 self-made wealthiest people in the world, at some point or another earlier on in their life, had surrounded themselves or been close to somebody else who was really successful. That's what the variable was. And I do think that there's incredible wisdom over there if you unpack that a little bit. To surround yourself with successful people, thoughtful people, ultimately they're looking at the world through a certain way. They're just normal human beings like you and I and like everybody else, who, because of their perspective, because of how they look at the world, there's wisdom, there's nuggets, and ultimately there's things that turn around and make something that otherwise seems impossible seem possible. And once you know that you're capable of something that's otherwise impossible, all of a sudden a whole world of possibility opens up for you and you're prepared to take that journey. And again, surrounding yourself, even to this day, you speak about it, Robin L., with our gray hairs, one or two, that is, it's still, I find, so important to surround yourself with people who are successful and thinking bigger and better than oneself and encourages that of oneself. With that said, and I wanted to kind of touch on that part of the business. In terms of fast-tracking this, ironically, I think you need to go a little bit slower coming out of the gates. You know, a lot of people, when they're entrepreneurs at the beginning, want to just get started. And when you're younger, you're not necessarily thinking big enough. So you go and you start a business and it doesn't necessarily have the wide spatial potential to become something that's big, because who are you as a 24 or 25 or 28-year-old to be thinking about taking on the world? It's not a realistic thought process, even though folks have done it time and time again. The human psychology doesn't lend itself to it. So I would say two things. Number one is find a great mentor who's been successful. I think that's absolutely pivotal. And think big. Think about an industry that's a big industry. Because once you take that jump, or once you start doing what you're doing, you can't unwind and get back into the plane. So you may as well tackle something that's really big and an industry that's really big, because whether it's big or whether it's small, you're still going to be working 12 hours a day. Make sure it's got the potential from the get-go. And ultimately, that means taking a little bit longer deciding what you'd like to do. It means probably doing way more research from the get-go than you'd like to do. Again, because once you start, what you're going to find is somehow it didn't work out exactly the way you thought it was going to work out. And if you've done lots of homework and lots of research, you'll know where to look and you'll be able to course correct rather than learning as you go. So I think those are some important lessons. And maybe the final one is, you know, again, I did a lot of reading and researching as though I can absorb the wisdom or become somebody else from reading their autobiographies. And it was helpful. But at the end of the day, we're all on our own journey. And once you're out there and once you're on the field and doing what you're doing, setting your own course and working hard, you'll learn as you go along. And I think it's once you're ready to go, go, focus, work hard, learn by experience, and ultimately there's no substitute for that.
I think that's going to be welcome advice to our younger listeners. But if we want to talk to our, let's call them more seasoned professionals at this point, what keeps you motivated? Like, what's the type of thing that keeps you going and excited to keep pushing forward? Because I think there's a lot of people at our stage in our careers where we've accomplished a lot, but there's next levels that we all want to get to. And, you know, maybe you don't have them, maybe you do, but I would say, you know, the energy level is a little bit different. My focus is a little bit different at this point in my career, but I'd love to hear how you address that.
Look, I think businesses either get bigger or they get smaller. They don't stay the same. You know, so as a starting point, it's to acknowledge that and to acknowledge, in my case, what drives me. And what drives me is getting better and bigger at what I do. When I go out and play golf, which I'm really shitty at, I still want to get better. Whatever I do, I want to get better. And the same applies to business. I think without having that competitive element, for me anyway, life kind of feels like it's not as much fun. And even though that brings about an element of pressure, when you're constantly pushing and trying to get bigger and better, I think pressure ultimately is a good thing. Provided it's not too much pressure, I think it's a good and healthy way to live. And frankly, even though fortunately financially, I probably don't have to work and I could live without that pressure, that scares me way more than the joy and the thrill of building something and making it better and better. And the other thing, I think the life expectancy of human beings is probably the biggest determinant of it. It's not what we eat. It's not how much we exercise, even though things like that are obviously important. Ultimately, it's about human connectivity and the human relationships that we have. And if you build the right culture and are working with friends that you like, ultimately, that's a network and people that care about you, that inspire you, that motivate you, and vice versa. And it's fun. It leads to longevity. So I'm always mindful of that stuff, Robert, so that if I ever do lose my bearings, then it really brings me back. The final thing that I will say is over the course of my career and over the course of building this business from the ground up, you know, to a company that hopefully will do close to $1 billion in revenues this year, just change my role at the company, become more of a mentor, become more of a cheerleader, making sure that, you know, my team is as motivated and focused as ever, whereas in the earlier days of my career, it was about me being as motivated and focused as ever to bring in the business. Now it's about expanding that wisdom to everybody else. So my role continues to change as the company evolves.
Like you said before, Al, there's so much in there, and I think we could probably have a 2 or 3 hour podcast with Clive, but I know we've arrived at the point of the podcast where, Al, you have your signature question lined up, and I'll let you take it away.
Well, before we do, though, I just want to go back to Clive's last answer, and he shared a whole bunch of stuff that I really can relate to, except your comment about the golf. I gave up on trying to be better at golf long, long ago, so that would be the only thing I might take issue with. But anyway...
I didn't say I am getting better. I said that I'm trying to get better. Not succeeding at this stage.
Yeah. There's a big difference between wanting to get better at golf and actually doing it. I think that's why I gave up long ago.
So true.
Yes. So I would love to ask you this final question. And here we go. A society grows great when old persons plant trees in whose shade they will never sit. So can you talk about any of those proverbial trees that you might be planting? Could be professionally, it could be personally.
Yeah, it certainly changes over the course of one's life. You know, I mean, I didn't get into business with any real intentions of making a huge difference to the world. I got into business because I wanted to be rich and successful. I mean, that's kind of being completely blunt about it. And you spend a few years in your community and then work with a communications team and say, you're not going to say it like this, you're going to say it like that. And we're doing it because of this, so we're not doing it because of that. And I'm under no illusions why I got into business in the first place. Now, also, earlier on in my career, and I'll get to answer your question, I'll just bear with me. Earlier on in my career, I think I cared what just about everybody thought of me. This one, that one, the next one. That, I guess, part of that has to do with my psychology and upbringing, but that's the way I was wired. And I think as I've gotten older, I'd be lying if I said I don't care what people think of me. But I have trained myself to really focus what people think of me who know me. And that could be positive or could be less positive. But if people know me, if they've worked with me, or if they know me personally and intimately, what they think of me means a great deal to me. And in the context of my legacy, I want people who know me well to have really positive things to say about me. So that's number one. Number two, I think such an important role, and part of this, Robin, goes back to your earlier question about what I'm doing at the company today, where my role is building culture, building values, besides thinking through strategy and tactics of the business is so incredibly important to me, because one day I'm not going to be at the company, and if you build a company with great culture and great values, that endures the founder or the CEO or whoever it is at the time. And that's another really big part of my legacy, for me anyway, is ultimately having a business that survives me by many, many decades and goes on to be the largest in the world, not only in Canada, the US, and the UK, which is where we are at the moment, at what we do. I think that's another really important part of my legacy. And I'm finding as well at this stage of my life that I'm getting, you know, we started off the call, Robin and Al, informally before we started the call, just speaking about some of the insanity in the world, particularly in these times, and maybe it's been building to this. And I've watched that stuff really, really closely, not only because of how it may impact our business, but because I've developed a keen interest in it. And it's just, you know, politicians are just normal people who have chosen a certain path. And from my perspective, man, I'd like to get more involved and more active somehow in being able to shape that. The final part for me of my legacy is to have been a great father. I'm a great family guy, and I know that the values and what I instill came from generations before me, and hopefully I've taken what I've been given from the amazing family I was born into and be able to pass it on to my kids, and hopefully that can filter down through generations. Those are kind of the areas that I think about.
Clive, I love that you mentioned your kids and those who came before you too. I think that's something really important that, you know, sometimes we forget about that, right?
Yeah.
So I think it's great that you added that.
Fantastic.
Clive, a few years ago, before the podcast was named Success Leaves Clues, I mean, it was a series, it was an experiment. And I had told Al the premise behind what I believe Success Leaves Clues meant. And this conversation today just is the reason why I wanted to start this series, because I think you've dropped so many nuggets of gold for people. I wouldn't be surprised if you get a ton of DMs after this, because I know I will. It's been such a pleasure, and I'm so glad we're connected. For listeners who are interested in learning more about what you're doing personally or your business, what's the best way for them to reach out?
The best way to reach out is on my LinkedIn profile under Clive Kinross. Please, I encourage that. The other thing that I find is I'm spending more of my time doing is trying to be helpful to people who do reach out, particularly to young entrepreneurs. So by all means, please do that. And I'd be remiss if I didn't return some of the favor over here, guys, and just say that I think you're running a great podcast over here. You know, I know that we had an introductory call, which was fantastic. I've done a few podcasts that was unusual, just getting the heads up and you guys finding the time and some of your busy lives to do that. And just speaking of the chemistry amongst people and how important it is, going back to my earlier comments, the chemistry of the both of you on that call was outstanding. And just watching the two of you, how you interact over here, no doubt is a critical part of your success, which reminds me of one final little golden nugget, if I could quickly pass that on, because it's proven to be so important in my life. I read a book which really shaped this way of thinking by Jim Collins. Probably the best business book I've ever read. It's called Good to Great. And in essence, without discussing everything that the book's about, in essence, the book asks a fundamental question in business and says the most important aspect is the who question. Who you do business with is distinct from what you do. We opened today's podcast speaking about some of the challenges in the early years, and there's going to be challenges in business. But if you're with the right group, if you're with the right who, ultimately you'll get through the what, whatever it is. So I would say to any young entrepreneurs, probably the most important question you could ask yourself is who are you going to go on the journey with? Not necessarily what that journey is. The what's also an important question. But don't forget the who. Invariably, that's the most important question, because what you think the business is going to be ultimately isn't what it is going to be. But if you are with the right people, you could navigate all of that success.
That is such a great answer and resonates so well with me. And I hope it does with Al as well, because what I'm about to say is we're about to celebrate 20 years together as business partners, the three of us, Joe, who you haven't met, who I'm sure you will meet at some point. And 20 years later, I am so glad this is the journey I went on with these guys. And it's been fun to face those challenges together. We've had our ups, we have our downs. Thankfully, there's been more ups than downs.
More ups than downs.
Yeah, but I'm very thankful to be on this journey with them. Well, that does it for today's episode. I think you can tell Al and I really enjoyed this conversation. As always, we hope you did too. If you have any questions for Al or myself, please feel free to give us a call or rejoin the conversation on LinkedIn. We saw it here today. Success leaves clues. We'll see you next time.